This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome, travelers. We're aware that your journey was difficult, but prepare to have your questions answered, for you have been granted an audience with the Masters of Mod.
And welcome back to Masters of Modern. I am your host, Alex Kessler, here with my co-host, Michael Grothy. Ben Bateman is still injured. He'll eventually come back to us. We have also our producer in the house.
What up?
Marshall James.
I wish I had sound effects.
You could do that. I found like a cool streamer keyboard that lets you do sound effects and things.
Yeah, Stream Deck.
There. We should popular. Do that.
Yeah.
But that's what Masters of Modern needs to become. It needs to become the modern drive to work podcast that's like...
Just every morning, someone shows up at 7 a.m., me and Ben have to wake up that early, which will never happen. You could just be the guy by yourself.
You're listening to Michael in the mouth in the morning.
Just like have sound effect boards of me and Ben saying ridiculous things and you can press them. So... Just
Mere Superion. Mere Superion.
We are the Modern Focus Podcast. You can find us on collected.company. We have a YouTube channel. If you're on YouTube right now, make sure to hit the like and subscribe and then comment something, but then hit the like button again just once, but make sure you hit it. It's really important if you're on YouTube. If you're on iTunes, a review is really appreciated. We don't ask for them every week, but we like to hear how you think we're doing and giving us 5 stars. Don't give us less than that. That's not cool.
5 stars and then constructive criticism, that's just fine.
Yeah, exactly. Big shout out also, you can find us on Twitter. I am at Kess Wiley.
I'm at Dudard, D-U-D-A-R-D-D.
I'm at Marsh Unfocused.
You can find at Ben Bateman Media. That's Ben. He's at Ben Bateman Media. And then we are at the MMCast. Today we're going to be talking about a bunch of stuff. Primarily, it's going to be a big Eldraine conversation. We were having, just as part of the pre-conversation, a little bit of a discussion on how legendary cards work and what we think the design space could be moving forward on them that we're going to pick up and restart because we thought it'd be content you guys might want to listen to. But that is something to say. If you are a Patreon member, so you can donate to the Patreon and you are a $5 level or above, you get access to the raw episodes. And there's this big, Marshall just hits record once he gets here and we start talking about stuff. We talked about Stranger Things today. I got depressed. We talked about
I'm still stoked for Stranger Things season 4. I will
creature
be there.
Types. We have a whole saga over Warlock. Today Warlocks finally came up on top. Now we got in the nobles a little bit, and that's what got us the legendary.
More like
creatures.
I relented. I wonder part of the thing is I've accepted that Warlocks are a thing. They're going to be a thing. But then I was like, okay, well, are there creatures in the past that should be eroded? Like, should every creature who is a necromancer be eroded to be a Warlock?
I'm into that.
Well, I think it depends on how... There hasn't really been a clear creative explanation that I've seen for what the difference between a Warlock and a Wizard is. Shaman, Druid, Cleric, I kind of get it, right? A Cleric's magic comes from some divine being, right? That's imbuing them with holy power or whatever.
And in general, magic, clerics have something to do with your life total. They're right. Usually making people lose life. They're making you gain life, depending on the color. But they're all the life-focused magic.
A druid is more drawing power from nature and
from
the land.
So they're like
the
guys who make mana or they untap lands. Yeah.
Right. And then like a shaman is like getting... Shaman is a little blurrier, but they're not study. They're like wisdom instead of knowledge, right?
And in magic, shamans tend to either have powerful activated abilities or they're the most aggressive spellcasters. They're usually like big, beefy, and do things when you...
Yeah, sure. There's like 1-3 shamans that get spells from the graveyard. They're just the red wizards.
Sure, but I mean, thematically in magic, a lot of shamans have powerful like tap abilities, like tap activate abilities, or they're the like real. They're relatively aggressive.
The distinction between creature types in magic tends to be more flavory than mechanical, and there are mechanical distinctions. Like druids tend to make mana or do stuff like that, but the difference between a shaman and a wizard tends to be a little bit more flavorful, since like most of the things that shamans are doing, wizards could also do. And most of the things that wizards are doing, in most cases, shamans could also do.
Yeah, I think it's more reverse. It's that if a card is doing this mechanical thing, it's more likely to be a druid than a wizard. But druids, they use druids for like, oh, this makes squirrel tokens. Or like, this is a random thing that does something.
But in general, druids have a connection to nature.
Flavorfully-wise,
and
yes.
So, like, you know, wizards, I'm guessing, given all these distinctions, they tend to be people who have studied their magic.
Yes.
And are more nerd wizard, like yeah. nerd spellcasters, right? So like if you are a necromancer who went to necromancer school and learned necromancy, then maybe you're a wizard. But if you're a necromancer who like
made a pact with the demon
or something, yeah, I mean that's the distinction in D&D, right? Is that in D&D warlocks get their power from some patron who is a powerful magical being, not of divine nature, so like a demon or
sure. Can be a dragon warlock. Yeah, that's a thing, right?
You can be a dragonborn yeah. warlock. Sure, cool. Dragonborns are.
Well, no, like a like, can you get your warlock magic from a dragon?
Sure.
Cool. well, I think more of the point is that it more often they're used for the flavorful reasons. Like every single one of these creature types could make a 1/1 token, right? And it's just why they're doing it is then added with flavor, and then that will provide which job they have and how they learned that magic. Are they?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm speculating on, is that wizards are more like learned spellcasters. So like necromancer isn't definitively a warlock. It's like, how'd you get to be a necromancer? How'd you get in the necromancy game? Did you go to sure. school, or did you just like
get really close?
Find a book in some abandoned shack in the woods yeah. and just like, now I raise skeletons from the dead. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's potential. So that's the type of conversations that we've had for the last 4 weeks. And I believe everyone's now sick of it.
We're still having it.
on the Patreon. But today, and that led eventually to Noble and conversation about errating creature types. I do think the biggest issue with errating is just like, it makes stuff worse. Like I actually really still kind of dislike the damage to everything. Wording any as an errata feature.
Damage to any target?
Yeah, damage to any target. So they've changed. They used to be damage to target player or target creature, and then if you did it to player, it could redirect to a planeswalker, and they realized
which that. Which is annoying.
Which is annoying because it's a weird extra rule. But the reverse of that is now I have to look up every damage spell on the planet to figure out in modern what they
you
do.
You really don't.
The number of times that I've like cast Earthquake and been like, I hit your planeswalker and people are like, wait, what? Or like, I have a planeswalker and I'm like, wait, you know, like, does this hit a planeswalker? Like, does Chandra Torch of Defiance hit a planeswalker? I mean, the answer used to be yes, now it's no. But I'm just saying that the old rule, because it was also using something that was not printed on the cards, it was using kind of like a weird workaround rule that wasn't printed on the cards. There was confusion there too.
Sure.
Now with this new errata, you still have a weird rule that's not printed on the cards mm-hmm. where like suddenly Lightning Bolt is now damaged to any target, even though that's not what it says on the card.
Sure.
But
and more even like it's like Skullcrack is one that I think is a more relevant one than Lightning Bolt. Because Lightning Bolt, like it's like this is the basic damage spell sure. that's super famous and does damage to anything. Skullcrack makes it so they can't gain life. So does that mean it doesn't? Like I actually right now don't know if it hits Planeswalker.
Yeah, I'm sure it does.
But Skullcrack deals to player or Planeswalker.
Okay, because
everything like, they used to say player.
The thing that I have found easiest to get into my mind to make sure that I don't misunderstand these is always if it could deal to target player damage, then it now says player or Planeswalker. If it said to all players or to all opponents, it does not do it to Planeswalker.
I think what Alex's problem is that if they printed a card in the next set in Theros that had the exact same words on it as Skullcrack, it would do something different from what Skullcrack does, right? Because Skullcrack hits Planeswalkers, but if they printed with the exact text of Skullcrack where it doesn't say Planeswalker, then it would not hit Planeswalkers.
And I understand why the change was made, and I'm not saying they shouldn't have done it, because I, especially for arena purposes, it was like a big cleaning up that they were able to accomplish, but I do think that there are cards out there that's like, oh, does this do this thing?
Right, and like in the future, they'll probably print cards like Blightning or like Skullcrack, where like it has to only hit a player because it like causes some thing to bad to happen right. to that player, like it causes them to discard cards or it causes them to not gain life or whatever,
right?
And so it like flavorfully needs to hit a player. It doesn't make sense if it hits a planeswalker, but it introduces some confusion because the cards that were printed like that used to use the Planeswalker redirection rule, which was an annoying rule. And now, like, it would have been better if the Planeswalker redirection rule had never existed and they just did this when they introduced Planeswalkers.
Correct.
And I think at the time they were like, it's not worth it. And then it's like, oh, actually, Planeswalkers are incredibly popular and we want to put tons of them in every set and push them to the point where they're always playable and we should
have answers for
make things be clean.
I mean, remember how long they waited to put like destroy target Planeswalker on a card? Yeah. So with that in mind, adding creature types to pass cards for the most part is probably safe, especially for something like Noble, where Noble doesn't matter. And
you say that now, when they added human to a bunch of cards, it didn't matter.
Correct.
every tribal discussion has to degenerate into humans. But humans, right? Yeah. Isn't that what has to happen?
I was on a Merfolk podcast that I'll shout out more next week because it comes out next week, not this week. And we talked about that very thing on like how like right now Merfolk in general is being hated on as are other tribes because Wizards has to print good answers to humans and spirits. And like, they're just like trickle down
plague engineer economics
for elves. I think elves is worse off than merfolk because plague, like, they're a bunch of 1/1s.
Sure. I would say that immediately before plague engineer was printed, merfolk was probably worse off. Immediately after, elves is more worse off.
But so we were talking about nobles, and then that led to the conversation of adding it to Queen Marchesa. Marshall is one of Marshall's favorite cards.
I mean, she's card. Only the best legendary creature ever printed.
There you go. True statements going all around.
Lucky for us, she's not legal in modern. She'd dominate the format.
It's true. Oh my gosh. Can I quick sideboard? So
I was looking at Kess, the giant card printed up on me.
So, quick sideboard. There was just the other day, Wizards' official Twitter account tweeted out a please take a survey, help make the game better. That was mostly focused on Commander, wanting to get stuff from Commander players. So I went through it, and it was great. They asked a bunch of questions about, like, what's your favorite colors and why you build Commander decks and da-da-da-da. And then they got to a thing about how would you feel about Commander-specific or multiplayer-specific keywords showing up in Standard-level products. And they gave, like, Partner and Parlay as, like, examples. And I was like, sure, that's fine with me. And then one of the big questions was, how would you feel about a Commander product based around the Monarch? And I was like, I cannot smash yes, please fast enough. I'd also like to point out that having now looked through all of them, I am right. Anything that says each player, now that said each player, still only says each player.
My issue isn't with the each, it's the other way. It's there are things that say target player that don't target Planeswalkers. It's not the each player thing. That's I don't necessarily disagree with.
Oh, okay.
It's like, for instance, a good example is Blightning. Is like they said when they said it, if things target a player and it matters that it's hitting the player for an effect, it won't hit them. Blightning does hit Planeswalkers, right? They didn't change that for some reason.
Yeah, sure. Like any of those, like they said going forward, that's what they're going to do. But in the past, if the thing targeted a player, even if it doesn't make sense, they've now eroded it to say, like Blightning. Blightning now says, deals 3 damage to target player or Planeswalker. That player or Planeswalker's controller discards 2
cards. Does Rakdos return to hit Planeswalkers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the same thing as Blightning. I don't see why it wouldn't.
Isn't it you discard cards equal to how much damage it does, or is it no. X is both? Oh, okay.
It says Rakdos's return deals X damage to target opponent or Planeswalker. That player or Planeswalker's controller discards X cards.
Sure.
And so that,
which they wouldn't print that nowadays because it sounds nasty, but
yeah,
but
not as clean of a card.
Basically, how they did so, a general rule of thumb is if a thing targets a player, it can now target a Planeswalker unless it was printed Dominaria afterwards. And if it said each player or each opponent, then it can't. And that's just a pretty good general rule of thumb that I think applies nearly 100% of the time.
Fair. Internet, please.
But it is still
examples that are weird.
Oh yeah,
it is still something that, like, sometimes you're not going to be sure, and you're going to have to look it up. But I would argue that that was also true before as well. I had a handle on it as a judge, but I had a lot of players ask me questions, like at tournaments or at Commander nights, where like somebody's like, wait, can I hit their Planeswalker with this? What about this? Like, I need to get rid of that Planeswalker. Can anything in my hand? Like,
and I think we live in a world now where moving forward, every card is just going to be more clear, which is why it's a good thing they made the change. And I think it's a good thing that they did that.
Yeah.
My point is more both sucked, and like, yes, and but errata feels more often to me harder to deal with than a blanket rule that you just have to learn, I guess, because then it's,
I feel like it's the same thing. And errata is a blanket rule you have to learn, more or less.
But like, I don't generally, as a Magic player, need to know ever that this random card from Stronghold is a human now. Right? Like, that errata is
human's
fine.
A tribe. You do have to know now.
Not in any format that matters.
Legacy humans. You haven't seen Legacy humans? It's converting over. Are vintage. You play humans in vintage?
Card. That's, humans are problematic. Get rid of the them all. Errata humans to be like three creature types. We got nobles, we got peasants,
and we got citizens.
You
could
be serfs.
Well, I mean, before
serfs, like, surely he should now make peasant tokens, right? Serfs and peasants are synonymous. Like, why didn't, I mean, I understand that they didn't call them serfs.
What are your views on sables?
Sables?
So there's two of them, I think. Or there's two sables in the real world, but they're a part of the family of weasel. But Wizards, like Dog, decided that weasel is a creature type they're not going to support.
This was like a big conversation on Twitter.
I know. That's why
a former Wizards creative person said that it was because... Yeah, he said that it was because... I just want to drop... I wanted to, you know, let the cast listeners and viewers know that he's a former Wizards creative person.
Sure,
I just used the name. But yeah, it was Kelly
Diggs.
I
thought you were just going to go
with
the name.
He said that Dog and Weasel both didn't sound fantasy-y enough, which is the reason that they're not creature types. Mm-hmm. And Hound and Sable sound...
Right, so there's one Sable in Magic.
Bronze Sable. Yeah, from Theros.
So are there any Weasels in Magic? No Weasels?
No, that's the point. It's not fantasy enough. Doesn't sound
but
cool.
But in mongoose, the real world, there's only mongoose, two species of Sable.
Is Nimble Mongoose creature type Mongoose? It's got to be, right?
Yes,
yeah.
There's a Mongoose and there's a Sable. So
there's no otters, though, right?
I don't think there's any otters.
That's one thing he was hung up on, too.
He wanted there to be... Somebody wanted there to be an otter. I think he was in agreement.
In fact, Karoo Meerkat has been eroded to being a mongoose, but I'm pretty sure meerkats and mongooses are different.
They're not.
Meerkats and mongooses are different, but
beast.
They are...
They should all be beasts.
They live in the same environment, and they interact very similarly with the world. I have,
really? They all do the...
Well, that's they don't do that, but they both, like, burrow in this... African plains land.
What about this though?
And like pop out of stuff.
Oh my gosh.
That's meerkat. Mongooses kill snakes.
we've been hoisted.
Huh?
Meerkat is a small carnivorian member of the mongoose family.
Wow. Yeah. Cool.
That makes
sense. Well, Wizards, you taught me yet another thing today.
Yeah. Otters should be blues. What was it? Oh, we did this. We did the whole, but otters are weasels. That was why otters couldn't work for my.
Are otters weasels?
Yeah.
I did not realize.
So if you look at freshwater otters, it like makes sense. And then you just like sea otters have added a bunch of more fur, so they're like a much cuter animal, but like river water otters are just weasels that
What
swim.
About beavers? Are they
beavers
weasels?
Beavers are rodents. This was that whole rodent conversation. Were you not? Did I not talk about this on the cast? That like I was trying to now that there's mice
and rats
I
and
want
squirrels
and squirrels, I want a rodent for each color. And so I was like, what are the blue and red ones? And I think we got to
beavers blue
for blue because they are artificers and they swim in water.
Oh my gosh, can we right. please, so, can so we beavers, please go to a plane with beaver folk?
That's all
so,
I want.
I want beaver folk so bad.
Beavers, like, they live in the water for one thing. That's like the basic level. But then also they like disrupt ecosystems to like construct
cities or
to construct structures, right? Like that sounds pretty blue to me, right? It's not particularly green to be building a dam and just like totally wrecking an ecosystem.
You'll have no arguments on the blueness of beavers from me.
All right, I'm just explaining to the audience at large, right?
Yeah.
So what we're saying is, audience, please take to Twitter, demand beaver folk in a few
years.
We could have beaver warlocks. I'm not going to stop until there are beaver warlocks.
It'd
beaver
be a blue black card.
blue black
beaver warlock.
Just like beaver, like. Wait, what's the red? What is the red? Is it rabbits?
The internet.
Oh, no, that's not a rodent.
So yeah, rabbits aren't rodents. I learned a lot about rodents on this whole thing. Rabbits aren't rodents, apparently. Didn't know that until this moment.
They're Lego
totally different
morphs.
Thing. Yeah. No. I'm now all on board. People are also arguing that blue was rabbits because of the rabbit mutant that's out there.
Visor Jix is a magically altered rabbit, though.
Oh, perfect. So rabbits could be anywhere. Also not rodents. So gremlins is what the world decided because they're
from
fictional.
Kaladesh.
The Kaladesh gremlins could be considered rodent-y.
And they act very rodent-y, and they have, right?
I could be on board gremlins.
Yeah.
Like, if, okay. I mean, they basically, the premise of a gremlin is like, what if rats liked to eat electronics?
Right.
And that was their thing. And then that's what a gremlin is. Also, they have six arms for some reason, or six limbs. We should talk about,
some
Eldraine cards, or maybe some...
This is all Eldraine related. This creature type debate was created by Eldraine.
Maybe modern? We could talk 30. About modern.
All right, so let's talk about... I'm just going to go in order of how Mythic Spoiler is laid out, because then I don't have to find cards.
But we have like a...
Yeah, but then I have to like find it. Dekt hasn't updated yet. So if you can... Then I could search. I have no way to search for cards. We're starting with Brazen Borrower. I also think we should save... what's the card we talked about for like an hour last week that is gone to time? Oh, by the way, apologize for last week and the fact we lost audio. But Brazen Borrower, one blue-blue creature fairy rogue, flying flash. Brazen Borrower can block only creature cards with flying. It's a 3-1, but it can go on an adventure. That adventure is Petty Theft, instant adventure. Return target non-land permanent and opponent controls to its owner's hand. I think people are underrating this card. I agree with the problem with this card, that this card should be an uncommon, but...
or just a rare. I hate mythics that are like, yeah, this will be a 4-of in a lot of decks.
So it's interesting because my standard playing experience now is so much more... And it, not that I've played paper standard in maybe a decade, but for the reason I'm playing any now is because it's in Arena. Rares are the ones I don't want cards to be. I have so many mythics that are just like...
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
Not being used, and like everywhere I'm getting like basic or rare lands.
Yeah.
So like, I guess this card's going to be easier for me to get if I need it. In Modern, I actually think this is playable, though.
I think that one speculation I heard based on the name sounding like it steals stuff, and the ability also sounding like it steals stuff, that this card may have done something different at some point and felt more mythic. Like if it had some sort of mind control, or you take a card out of their hand and you can cast it at some point, like take a card out of their, like something a little spicier, and then they decided to make it a constructed card, but they didn't have like a rare slot to fill. So they just changed the card and kept it mythic. That's the speculation I've heard that makes the most sense to me as to why it's mythic. I
mean, could have this
but
just
the world may never know.
Like 3-1 flyer that can't block, and then just Vendilion Click for 2 mana or 3 mana as an adventure.
Maybe
like,
that's what it had been, and they toned it down. Who knows?
Because like, I mean, separating those effects, it's more expensive now, but maybe they just got it in the testing and last minute were like, we like this card is better.
Right.
Than
like it could
else.
Have been something more exciting that was either powered up to be a player in standard or powered down to not be oppressive in standard. Mm-hmm. And one way or the other, it ended up being like kind of a vanilla boring. Seeming card that ended up at Mythic just because that's what they had a slot for.
Right. And I do think like this has a lot of utility. I think people are also maybe underestimating the versatility of adventure cards because a lot of the time they're just seeing it as kicker instead of like split card that also has kicker. It's closer to what's the split card mechanic that lets you cast
fuse.
Both halves? It's closer to fuse almost.
Well, I mean, so this card actually reminds me a lot of Nimble Obstructionist in that it is a flash flying threat that can just come down and clock them. It's the exact same body, mm-hmm. but it has another mode. Now, what's interesting about it is like Nimble Obstructionist counters a triggered ability and draws a card. This bounces a permanent and draws a card, but the card that it draws is a 3-1 flash flying. So it like,
it,
I don't know.
I think
it's the closest thing we have to this, sure. right? If we're going to try and compare it to something that exists. And Nimble Obstructionist does see Fringe Modern play.
And when I've played with the card, the reason I've always stepped away from it is I kind of always wanted it to do both. And the sense that I'm playing it in the, I'm always like, I put in the deck in the idea like, oh, this will be a threat that is also a counterspell.
Right.
And
you're only putting it in a deck where you would play a 3-1 flash flying. It just has some other utility.
But what I always end up with is like, well, I don't want to use the cycling. I don't want to just play it because this cycling could come out at every moment. And then I'd feel bad if I just had this 3-1 flyer that wasn't doing anything and vice versa. And also 3 mana for a stifle effect is like a lot, even though you draw
a
card.
It is a lot, yeah.
Where 2 mana for a like non-land boomerang that you get to draw a card off of is something that I'll play every single time. Like, I'll,
right. Sometimes you're just going to end step a 3-1 to clock them, and sometimes you need to like interrupt their combo, or you need to get rid of their germ token or something.
And it's guaranteed curve out, right? Like if I'm on the draw, I can turn 2, bounce whatever they played on turn 2, their Tarmogoyf for Ren and 6, and then turn 3, play this.
Or just their Birds of Paradise, turn. Slowing them down.
Yeah.
Like, if you go turn 1 island and they go turn 1 Birds of Paradise and you snipe their birds during their upkeep.
they're like behind and you drew a card for like zero tempo play and you never tapped out. Like I think this card is actually pretty playable just from the fact that it does so much.
And having a main deckable unsummon, I think, is powerful, as we've seen with Cryptic Command, mm-hmm. because like there's just a lot of permanence that sometimes you don't want to be. You just need to get rid of it for a turn to like sneak in damage or slow down your opponent or interrupt their combo or something. And being able to do it main deck for two mana on like a card that does something is like pretty strong, I think.
Yeah.
And I think it's also notable, like the fact that it has three power means that there's a lot of times it can come in and snipe things out of the way, so then you can take out a planeswalker in much the same way that
you can end step just do both, right? Yeah. You can end step like bounce their flying blocker, flash this in, take out their planeswalker or whatever. Or for three, you can just play it if they don't have a flying blocker and take out their planeswalker. Yeah, I think it's cool. You know, it needs to be in like kind of a tempo-y shell that's willing to play a 3-1, but I think that it also benefits a lot from Stoneforge Mystic being in the format because you can put swords and such on it.
Cauldron of Eternity. So 10 black, legendary artifact. This spell costs 2 less to cast.
It's just a funny mana cost.
Black, legendary artifact. This spell costs 2 less to cast for each creature card in your graveyard. Whenever a creature you control dies, put it on the bottom of its owner's library. You may tap it and pay 2 black, pay 2 life. Now, return target creature card from your graveyard to the battlefield. Activate this ability only any time you could cast a sorcery. I know that there are combo decks being built in Standard already.
Yeah,
that
there's
are
like
kind
standard
of
reanimator decks.
I think this has, I mean, for 5 mana at once, you can start just bringing creatures back into play every turn. It has a feeling of like reverse birthing pod almost.
I feel like the quality of reanimator targets in Modern is similar to the quality of reanimator targets in Legacy. I mean, it's basically the same because
Grizzlebrand and
creatures,
Grizzlebrand is legal.
Elesh Norn and Grizzlebrand, Elesh Norn. There's like
Modern big dudes are more powerful than old big dudes,
right? So like, there's almost nothing in Legacy Reanimator that you can't play in Modern. And I think that like a one shot reanimate, like an Unburial Rites or something, that like is maybe a little bit easier to swing. This is like an overtime value reanimator card.
Yeah, so I was thinking more of this like as a one of in collected company shell, or not collected company shells, but like Kitchen Fink's combo deck Malira shells, where you're like more using it to start rebuying value.
So expensive though. Like, how do you stock your graveyard for this?
Sure.
Like, it's a value card in that basically you want to like stock up your graveyard with like self mill or like, you know, you're discarding cards to Liliana or something. I mean, assuming this was a Modern deck. And then once you have five creatures in your graveyard, right? Because it's creatures it counts.
Yes.
Then you get to pay 5 to reanimate something. So it just like strikes me as so slow and grindy, which is perfect for Standard because, you know, your format's slower and like the value you're accruing is better and the grave hate is worse. And I just think in Modern, it's like slow.
There's not other better ways to.
I think you would much rather just like Unburial Rites and Elesh Norn and call it a day, because Elesh Norn is high enough impact that you don't need to like be accumulating value over many turns. You're just like, boom, I did it.
Sure. So this is a cycle, and I think not all of them are necessarily going to see play, but it's the legendary. They're all kings, right?
We don't want to talk about any of the legendary artifacts.
Oh, we can. Do you have other ones that you have want to talk? I don't think the Knight one sees play.
I think the Great Henge is maybe the closest.
Okay, so the Great Henge is 7 green, legendary. Classic. Actually, something that is relevant, if there's ever a converted mana cost matters on like artifacts or permanents mechanic that ever gets printed, and I know this has existed in the past, these are all big things that reduce the cost of themselves doing things that are relatively normal.
Sure.
The Green Henge. This spell costs X less to cast, where X is the greatest power among creatures you control. Green, you can tap it to make green and gain 2 life, and whenever a non-token creature enters the battlefield under your control, put a +1/+1 counter on it and draw a card.
This card just gives you every single resource in the game. It gives you mana, it gives you life, it gives you
bigger creatures,
it draws you cards, it makes your creatures, it gives you power and toughness.
Yeah,
it gives you literally anything that you want. So I think that it could have a home.
Immortal Sun, like, in that way.
Yes, it reminds me a lot of the Immortal Sun, but you can potentially play it for cheaper. I mean, like, you know, it costs nine. So like, how much cheaper are you really playing it for? But it does do something the turn that you play it, because the turn you play it, you're going to gain two life and you might be able to use the two mana that you get.
I also think that this is almost a shoo-in for mono green stompy decks.
Yes.
Because like, you play three drop six ones, and like on turn five, if you just draw this and have this in your hand, you get this for six, into play.
Six mana?
Or I get...
Total, because you have to play the Groundbreaker.
Yeah, yeah.
But also like, good with like Steel Leaf Champion, sure. Or like other... It's good with like big green guys. So I could see an argument for it in Devotion, mm-hmm. or mm-hmm. faster decks where you want the gas and you want the plus one counters more than you want the mana. Where, yeah, you're like playing Steel Leaf Champion into this on turn four or whatever. Right. Or turn three if you like ramped out your Steel Leaf with a...
And you can, if you can get this into play, there are... It can cast a lot of the other cards you have in the deck as long as they're two mana.
Right.
Below.
So you go Steel Leaf Champion into this on turn four for how much does it cost? Four, right?
What is Steel Leaf Champion's power?
Five.
So
you get to cast it for four. The
you cast it for four.
And, immediately
and then you.
Two mana.
Right. You immediately play something for three. You play another Steel Leaf Champion or something. Yeah. Or you play a Groundbreaker. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and the fact that the Groundbreaker then comes in with a plus one counter and cantrips, you're just like, you're never losing when you play this unless your opponent, like, and blows it up, you know, like you're just never losing.
Yeah, I immediately thought about the Rock because I thought, wow, you could do turn three Reggie.
Yes, so then, that's what people are doing with it in Standard. They're playing Rotting Regisaur into this on turn, like for two mana. Right.
And Rotting Regisaur is already starting to show up in Modern, especially now that like Faithless Looting is gone. And some people, like we've talked about, are using Reggie, his downside as an upside. Like, yeah, I'll bend some Life from the Loam and stuff like that.
Discard Lingering Souls. Yeah.
So, yeah, having the Great Henge out on for just two mana on turn four when you have, or if even turn two, like you could do turn one Birds, turn two Reggie, turn three Great Henge, and still have four mana to cast things.
Yeah, and the fact that this gasses you up means it's like, oh no, I discard a card on my upkeep, so sad, play a creature, draw a card, play a creature, draw a card, play a creature, like, who cares?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't, Embercleave, the only thing with Embercleave is that if you get it onto a creature, you win, but it's like, there's a lot.
I think it's too many hoops. Yeah. Too many hoops. The Great Henge was the one I wanted to talk about. Okay. Unless you have one you're interested in, that was my card I think is somewhat underrated. Like, it looks, when you read it, it reads like a commander card, and you're like, whatever, but like, I think it's for real.
So we have our sister podcast, The Command Zone. You should go check those out. They're at collected.company. They also do game nights, and they're on YouTube as well. Gadwick the Wizens was their preview card, blue, 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 X. Gadwick the Wizens enters the battlefield, draw X cards. Whenever you cast a blue spell, tap target non-land permanent and opponent controls. It's a 3/3. I actually think this is, I think actually Mono Blue Devotion and all the Mono Blue Devotion decks that have always been on the fringe have the potential to get much better in the next 6 months because we're going back to Theros.
Yes.
So, like, cards that would be good in those decks are things to consider. Blue being the second best one in that standard era because it has Thassa and Master of Waves is definitely one to kind of talk towards. And this has a utility of, like, most cards like this historically are just spells. So the reason that the ones that were good is because they did something else. Like Sphinx's Revelation gained you life. So it made it so you had a buffer from the onslaught of them attacking you after gaining a bunch of life and tapping out to play it. What he does is he's a 3/3 creature. So he comes into play and then starts...
When he adds Devotion, he seems pretty good with Nykthos.
Yeah. So I think he's actually a pretty cool target.
I don't know that Mono Blue Devotion is going to quite make it in Modern, but if there is a Mono Blue Devotion deck, I think this guy is certainly at least a one of, as like a Nykthos mana dump that you can also just play as a 3-mana 3 Devotion card, right? Like, you
it's
can
also human. So if you ever if you have draw cards in humans,
oh yeah, obviously great for humans.
Also can come he collected company hits him, so you get him into play as a 3/3.
Yeah. And I mean, it's also cool that, like, that X doesn't have to be big. If you cast him for 4 mana, he's a 3/3 with that tap ability who replaced himself.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of value for just 4 mana.
Yeah, I think for Modern, that doesn't quite do it for me. But if you need the Devotion, I think that it could be a thing.
Well, I think the thing within a Modern is that's the worst case. Like, worst case scenario is a 3-mana 3/3 for in blue. But, like, worst case scenario, it's a 4-mana 3/3. Best case scenario is this is a late game, just fill my hand back up, making sure I have a threat to make sure I can protect against whatever creature I'm being attacked with. And then I untap, and then they never untap their creatures again.
Yeah, I just think that, like, I mean, it strikes me as a card that, like, you're trying to curve it into Master of Waves and you can dump your Nykthos mana into it. That's sure. what it looks like to me,
yeah.
personally.
Yeah, yeah.
But
I think that's not something to...
I don't think that deck exists. I don't think this card makes that deck exist. But you're right. Given that we're returning to Theros, if there's more devotion support, particularly for Mono Blue, and there ends up being a deck where people want to play Master of Waves, I think that this is, like, a card you play one or two of.
I mean, one other point is that one of the reasons... I mean, Mono Blue Devotion does exist in Modern. It's Merfolk, right? Like, that's what that deck...
Right.
It plays Devotion cards. It takes advantage of that mechanic to a certain extent. Now, there are a lot of cards that we just talked about being printed to fight humans that trickle down damage Merfolk that may be moving away from the tribal synergies of that deck benefit it. Now,
you're
I don't
playing
think this puts
Nykthos in Merfolk. Like, I think this is a card. I just don't see myself wanting to play this card outside of a Nykthos deck, I feel.
Sure, that's fair. I can see you playing it in a control deck, though.
As a sorcery?
Fair. Yeah.
Like, I'd play Blue Sun Zenith before I'd play this because you want mana untapped on your opponent's turn, right?
Yeah.
Assuming you're playing mono blue control, I think Blue Sun's gets the nod over this guy anyway. And realistically, in control, a 3-3 is, like, not relevant to the point where, like, I would play Mindspring over this if I had to.
Sure. Okay, the last of this cycle, because I don't think... I mean, I guess Yorvo could be being played in the mono-green devotion deck, and Oyera could see playing a mono-black devotion. Like, they all have that devotion feature. But Twitter was really excited about Torprint 3 and of the Redfell. And the fact that he makes your gut shots into free lightning bolts. So he is one red, 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 legendary creature, dwarf noble, 2/4. If a red source you control will deal damage to an opponent or a permanent an opponent controls, it deals that much damage +2 instead. This also makes Renin 6 into lightning bolt attached to it.
It makes everything into lightning bolt, right? In standard, people are making Cavalcade of Calamity into Lava Spike Factory. You can play it with Grape Shot. All your Grape Shots become lightning bolts.
Right. So I think he's got
Lava
a decent,
Dart
right?
becomes like, a lightning bolt with Thack a Mountain flashback lightning bolt.
Well, that's like the joke I was making was just play every red mana. There's like a few very inexpensive 2/3 with Gutshot and Lava Dart 1-damage spell effects you can play that he just like can kill a person if you get enough of them into your hand and in the graveyard of the turn you cast him. Especially if you had been doing damage to them up to that point with other things that are good. The other one was, this was a more of a rules question. So now that I have people that think and or are good at rules, does Grapeshot do 3 now, or is it just still 1?
Does 3 each.
Yeah, it's a red source that deals damage.
Each effect is a red source.
Yeah.
It's not 1. Okay, so yeah.
So there was some talk
about... You can make
a
bunch of copies of it, right? So you have a red 2-mana spell that deals 1 damage to target player, I assume. Mm-hmm. Well, it's always player, right?
That's what I thought. I just wasn't...
But then, you have a bunch of copies of 2-mana, 1 damage to target player.
So there's a turn where you like just like gutshot, grape shot, and win.
Sure, you have to untap like with this no ability 4-drop in play, but yes, it's a cute ability
because like Gutshot's free, Lava Dart's free, so you can play it, and then you have access to, as far as your opponent is concerned, multiple free lightning bolts.
Sure.
Also, the mono red devotion thing.
I think it's cuter more than anything else, but I could certainly see like a big red deck that has like some lava darts and lightning bolts to control the early game, and then suddenly you're like pew pew, burn you out,
and it's
because you let me untap with my 4-drop.
It's worth noting. It's worth noting also that it just says source. The source doesn't have to be a spell. So like there could be a red aggro-y deck that plays you know like the prowess decks. You know, now all of your he gives plus
that
2
in modern.
Yeah,
I mean
But it's like
if Goblins plays this as a 1-up, they just win, right? When it like if it does a similar effect,
he gets +2/+0 essentially.
Yeah,
to all
he's
of
an
your
overrun for your team, and like you've already probably chipped him down a little bit. So like I do think yes, 4-mana is a lot for aggro, but there are aggro decks that like that deck's already playing 4-drops.
His presence will make the idea of them ever printing Goblin Bombardment into Modern even scarier. Because that could be a... Oh.
I do like that. I think that playing this on turn 4 as your 4-drop and then having Goblin Bombardment in play means you can do a lot of stuff at that point, right?
Well, yeah,
like,
and then, like,
for free.
I was even thinking of putting this into, like, this is the top end of an aggro loam deck. Like, just with Renin 6's Assault Formation, right?
Seismic Assault.
Like,
you play the Ben Bateman special Flame Jab.
Yeah, or you have, what's the 2-mana guy, whenever you cast a spell, he untaps and does the damage that Ben likes. It's a 0/3.
Thermal Alchemist?
Yeah, Thermal Alchemist.
Thermo-Alchemist seems...
Thermo-Alchemist, you play this guy, you tap Thermo-Alchemist, do one damage, do three damage, gut shot them, untap, do three damage, pew, lava pew, guard, pew, pew, three pew. Damage. This deck builds itself. I'm here for it.
It's the deck that burns.
All right. I'm so happy about that card. Emry, Lurker of the Lock, 2 blue, legendary creature, merfolk wizard. This spell costs 1 less to cast for each artifact you control. When Emry, Lurker of the Lock enters the battlefield, put the top 4 cards of your library into your graveyard. Choose target artifact card in your graveyard. You may cast that card this turn. You tap it to do that ability. It is a 1/2. So we got affinity back. Affinity for artifact.
Sure,
back.
Yeah.
And it is attached to a card that just lets you return.
Card that lets you draw 4 cards and then cast spells out of your graveyard every turn?
Like, yeah. So Kess attached to draw 4 cards attached to affinity for artifacts.
So do you think Emry is going to see any play? Is probably just a standard player, right?
I'm going to make her so much cheaper with food tokens. Get ready. she's going to put some feasting trolls into the graveyard.
She doesn't let you cast food out of the graveyard, though.
But she lets you cast witches' cauldrons out of the graveyard.
But yeah, I mean, so Emry is really good as like a redundancy piece on your important combo piece artifacts, as well as like drawing cards and costing 1 mana.
Like I
being a legendary creature that you can use to tap Mox Amber.
I think there's like a real debate between how many of these that Urza decks play alongside Goblin Engineer. Because I do think that this doesn't replace Goblin Engineer, because the tutor effect in the prison style deck that it's playing is more important. But
I don't really think that Urza is like a prison-y deck. But being able to find your bullets, especially sideboard bullets, is good.
It's pretty prisony. It plays a bunch of prisony main deck cards.
Like Ensnaring Bridge. That's it. Yeah. There's like one Ensnaring Bridge.
It's much more of a... It's like a Thopter Sword combo deck that has an Ensnaring
Bridge. Like you're not like...
Get if it wants.
Yeah, but its interaction is prison and then it wins with combo. Like it's not playing like removal spells to stop your opponent. You're prisoning them out with cards.
You're just combo.
You're mostly a combo deck, right? The thing is like... I feel like the Urza deck feels a lot like... If you like Splinter Twin, Urza feels like the deck for you. I mean, it feels like if you like Splinter Twin, there were a lot.
I mean, like, I've heard a lot of comparisons to Birthing Pod. You, like, play a bunch of cards that don't really do anything by themselves, and then you, like, they kind of crescendo at this combo where you're like, here's my Mox Opal and my Mishra's Bauble and my Arkham's Astrolabe. Look at all this magic I'm playing. And then you're like, oh, now I win because they all became Mox Sapphires. And I play Goblin Engineer and I win.
Is it Grixis now? I can't tell. Sometimes. MTG Goldfish. I don't know where I found myself. MTG Goldfish.
Yeah, you need mana to cast Thopter Foundry, right? So you have to be... You're typically playing black. You could be playing white. You're playing red for Goblin Engineer a lot of the time because it's a tutor, and it also provides redundancy on your combo pieces, right? So even if you naturally draw both pieces of your combo and you find a way to discard Sword of the Meek or whatever, or you just cast it and sack it, or whatever it is, if you then later draw Goblin Engineer, if somebody blows up your Thopter Foundry or whatever, you can get it back. You can get back your Ensnaring Bridge if that's an important card in the matchup that they destroy. I mean, and Emry does the same thing where it like gives you redundancy on these pieces and also helps you find them with its mill four. It doesn't search the way Goblin Engineer does, but it also like, you know, it doesn't require you to sacrifice an artifact. So like if you have a Goblin Engineer out and somebody Shatterstorms and you lose all your stuff, Goblin Engineer is pretty sad unless you top deck an artifact or have one that you sandbagged. Mm-hmm. But Emry just immediately is like, okay, fine, tap, play, you know, Arkham's Astrolabe, draw a card. Maybe that's an artifact play. Like, you just get to start going from nothing with Emry. Also, not requiring mana means that you can do things like in a Jeskai Ascendancy combo deck with Emry. You can, like, tap, get Mishra's Bauble from your graveyard, untap Emry when you cast it, sacrifice Mishra's Bauble and just do that until you draw your whole deck.
Just and win the make win Emry the game.
Really big. Yeah.
Is that what that does?
Yep, pretty much.
And do you need green mana anymore?
No, I mean, there's been Jeskai Ascendancy decks that just play Fate Stitchers. That was like a popular thing when Treasure Cruise was still legal. It was like the original Jeskai Ascendancy deck was playing like Glittering Wish as like extra copies of Jeskai Ascendancy. And then there was like the PT that still had Treasure Cruise in it or something.
So do you
like
think
Fate Stitcher was like the hot tech where like you don't have to be playing 4 colors anymore.
So do you think an Emery, do you think, I mean, does this push Stress Cast Ascendancy back into a deck that's playable?
I think it's definitely a deck that people are going to try out. Mm-hmm. It's very powerful, and you can play Fate Stitcher. You have to be playing this weird artifact shell to make it good, mm-hmm. but I don't think that's like incredibly terrible. I mean, even just having like a free spell to cast into Ascendancy to loot and like untap your creatures once is fine.
And then Mishra's Bauble is a fine card on its own, and then you also get access to other kind of color fixers.
Yeah, you want like net free artifacts that free or net free artifacts can sacrifice themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's like Mishra's Bauble, Chromatic Star, because Chromatic Star, like you pay one to play it, but then one to sacrifice, and then one to play it, and then one to sacrifice. Like, and you.
Yeah, yeah. It replaces itself.
Oh, I guess it costs two.
It costs you one mana.
It costs you one, so that's not as good.
But as long as you have like a Fate Stitcher rolling, like I could see one that's like a just pure Jeskai, mostly focused on blue, has a lot of artifacts, and yeah, you just get that one Fate Stitcher, like Fate Stitcher, Emery, and if you have Star does it.
If you have two Mox Opals, that does it too, because mm-hmm. you can like play. You have one in play. You play the one in your graveyard. Sacrifice the one in play. Play that one.
Legendary, right?
It's not.
Okay. But Mox Opal is. So, I mean, you could also do the Mox Amber. Like, you could do, like, the backup
What's
the space game plan where you have Mox Amber.
And you're
Mox
playing Opals. Emery. Maybe you're playing Psy in this deck as, like, another legendary creature.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the classic like Mox Amber man.
Yep.
Or Fibblethip. Fibblethip in
sure,
Mox Amber.
Sure, you could play Fibblethip. Yeah. That's true.
Blocks for days. Draws you cards.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, there's
Jeskai Ascendancy's back, everybody.
I mean, I think the power level of Emery is such that, like, it goes into Wurza, obviously, easily. And I think that it could even spawn new archetypes, sure. like kind of an artifact-based Jeskai Ascendancy or something like that. Like, the power level's that high. I've also seen talk in Lantern, because Lantern is, like, more of a, like, I do think prison decks want this because you, like, are assembling your prison pieces, and anytime your opponent blows something up, you have to, like, kind of rejigger everything, right? But with Emery, you're just like, I recast it. Yeah. You can cast Chalice of the Void from your graveyard. She gets around it even when she costs one because she's cast, not like put into play like Goblin Engineer. Right. So you can like cast Chalice for on one, and then you can just like play an Emery for one mana.
She's also weirdly a good piece.
She has three CMC even though you're only paying one.
Oh yeah.
What do you think about, we haven't seen like a blue-based affinity deck, like using the powerful tools like Thoughtcast and stuff in forever and a day, but could we see the return of some sort of blue-based robots with
I think it's possible.
Arcbound and Thoughtcast?
It'd be like a little bit slower and more of a mid-rangey. I don't know if it's better at grinding than Hardened Scales.
I also think Stoneforge Mystic is a better version of that for that, because it just finds you. Like, that deck basically is like, the more of that equipment I draw, the more likely I am to win, and Stoneforge Mystic accomplishes that better than
It finds Cranial Plating. That's pretty good. Spicy. Stoneforge finding Cranial Plating. I like that idea.
I did it in Legacy back in the day. It was fun. But I do think actually on the Mono Blue Artifact train though, there were Mono Blue Tron decks for a while, and one of their win conditions was looping Mindslaver, and she is much better at that than other cards. And
Academy
now,
Ruins. Yeah, Academy Ruins was a card that you could search for. It was basically free to play because it was a land that entered untapped, and you didn't necessarily mind that it tapped for colorless.
Right. So I think you do both. I think
that Academy is interesting.
Out with her, they're like they're buddies.
I mean, you can recast Expedition Maps. You can recast Chromatic Stars. Right. You can recast Wormcoil Engines. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, she just does so much.
And like it allows you, and like with the Karn game plan now too, you can also just like keep the more dead pieces in the sideboard, and she's just like a resilience piece in that. So you can kind of play both together.
They counter your Mycosynth Lattice. You're like, okay, try again. What do you think? I have 15 mana. I could do this all day.
Oh, poor Mana Leak. Once upon a time, one in a green instant. If this spell is the first spell you cast this game, you may cast it without paying its mana cost. Look at the top five cards of your library. You may reveal a creature or land card from among them and put it into your hand. Put the rest on the bottom of your library in a random order. You have a lot to say about this. It's real good. I think one key thing that I didn't even pick up the first time so people who don't know, we had a whole discussion on this card that got lost to time in one of our four secret episodes that will never exist due to the power of memory cards and or the lack thereof. I didn't really realize that you didn't have to cast this on the first turn if you didn't, if it was the first cast.
It's a weird template because ley lines are like at the beginning of the first upkeep of the, or the beginning of your first upkeep, you do it right away. The timed.
It happened.
And this is if it's the first spell you cast this game.
So you can like just like play two lands, not do anything for the first two turns. And then on turn three, when you're like, oh, I don't have another land, or like, oh, I just need, I need creatures, just cast it then. And you now have so much more information, both on what your opponent's doing as well as where your draw steps have gotten you to, than if this was just like at the beginning of your turn, if you want to cast this you can for free.
Right. I mean, it's a little more relevant in standard where you can afford to take a turn off, or like maybe you play turn one Temple of Mystery and then turn two you have your draw step and then you play this, maybe you play another Temple of Mystery or something, and like you have a little bit more time. In modern, I feel like taking the first two turns off is aggressive, but like maybe if you don't have a one drop, you can also like play this and then respond with opt to give yourself a little more information. Mm-hmm. Or okay. Like
yeah
I don't know what modern deck wants to play both of these cards, but, you know, it could happen.
Rug Phoenix.
That's two instants. How do we get the Phoenix in the yard?
No, the new card.
Once upon a time, find Phoenix.
What is it? What's the card called? We talked about it last week. Trader? Bizarre Trader? Bizarre Trader.
No, it's not Bizarre Trader. That's a World Witcher.
Merchant of the Veil?
No.
No, I think it is Merchant of the Veil.
Oh, Merchant of the Veil? Yes.
The one that haggles?
Yeah, haggle is the instant that you like.
Yeah, it's an instant. So it's there you go.
Did that guy make it in the episode last week, or do we need to talk?
No, we did get to that. That was one of the cards that survived.
Cool. So you guys know our thoughts on haggle.
Yeah.
Go. But anyway,
one of the three cards we talked about last
week. So once upon a time, yeah. There's like some QT tricks you can do with it because of that. And like, you know, depending on what is in your deck, right? So I think that one of the best homes for this is like the Vizier of Remedies combo decks. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of times in that you want to find a one drop, you want to find a Noble Hierarch or Birds of Paradise, and so you're just going to fire this off on turn one, even if like even maybe before you've played a land, because you want to make sure you get that one drop. If you already have a one drop, you're still firing it off because you want to play it before your one drop to get it for free. But like
right
but you're playing this to find a one drop. But in a deck where you don't have one drops, like people are talking about playing this in like Tron, and maybe you don't have a green source on turn one, and so you're like turn one Tron land, I guess you probably have like an expedition map or something, so you do just want to fire this off. But
well, but I mean, I think there's other like there's also situations where I play a little bit, especially games too, like if I'm playing against burn and I just like only draw pain lands, I might fire this off,
play
like
a top land, like, play this. Yeah, I mean, it just depends on what kind of deck you're playing, but yeah, a lot of the time in modern in particular, you are going to want to play a one drop, so you're going to play this on your first turn, maybe even before you've played a land, to like find a land that's maybe better, or know if you need to play your shock land untapped because you found your Noble Hierarch or whatever.
But there's decks like I think in the deck actually we talked about that would like this the most, that maybe wouldn't cast it right away, is Amulet of Vigor decks, because like if you don't have Amulet of Vigor, you're not really doing that much on turn one. I mean, sometimes you are because you have cards that do it, but it's often you're just playing a land tapped and then trying to get the turn two where you then can find stuff, and this lets you like try and figure out what your hand is and finds you either a Primeval Titan. Apparently that's a thing that people want to do. I've heard
casting
Primeval Titan is good. Or get one of the bounce lands you need. If you need a bounce land, get one of the utility lands you have. I mean, the deck is
grab
all about
Azusa.
Yeah, grab Azusa. It's literally the deck is finding creatures and lands and maybe Scapeshift.
Well, and it needs to find Amulet of Vigor. That's the one thing you have to find places to cut for this. I think a lot of the time you're cutting lands for it because it's just free on turn one and it like just represents a land.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that was Frank Carson, right? The article was talking about how this
like represents sources. So he was talking about in the standard mana base, like for a for like a blue green or blue green flash. Or like Teemer Elementals or something, where like if you just cut a few lands and like a spell for this, for four of these, then like it represents those lost sources of mana that you were missing now. So you can cast your Frilled Mystic on turn four because you're just like playing this on turn one, and it helps you find your like dual lands, or it finds you the color that you need to like have two blue, two green on turn four or whatever. And in modern, it's the same thing where like you can cut some lands to do this. Now, Amulet of Vigor's mana base is unusual because they have to play all these weird utility lands and combo piece lands and bounce lands and gemstone mines. And so, but I don't know what lands you would cut for it, but yeah, you have to find cuts, and I don't know that Ancient Stirrings is it, because you do need to find those amulets as well. But the fact that this finds Azusa is good. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, it also, people are talking about it in Tron to help find lands because it's like free on turn one. And then later in the game,
people have been talking about it in Neobrand.
And Neobrand, which is like, you need to find an Allosaurus Raider ASAP or you can't win.
Yeah. I think that
And also, I think this helps. Neobrand doesn't want to play too many lands.
Yeah.
Like, you want an opening hand, ideally, that has maybe two lands. Sometimes you just want one land and, like, the Chancellor of the Tangle. And so being able to, like you were talking about, being able to slot this in over lands you otherwise would play, because it represents, you could deal yourself an opening hand with no lands, but, like, a Once Upon a Time, and if the rest of your combo is there,
you have a Chancellor.
And you have a chance. Yeah, if you have like a Chancellor and a
Do either the Chancellors? It's not. There's no casting. Like, you can get those effects and play Once Upon a Time, no problem as well. Correct.
Correct.
Yeah.
You can like, if you have a Ley Line, it doesn't stop it. If you use Serum Powder, if you reveal for Chancellors,
doesn't stop it.
Right, because it's just, you may begin with it on the battlefield.
Cool.
And likewise, suspending a card. So if you suspend a Search for Tomorrow, you can still
But once the suspend comes off, you can't.
Then you're casting it, so you won't be able to do it anymore. Right. Yeah, but if you suspend a Search for Tomorrow, you can still also, you know, do
yeah.
this. Do
this. I mean, just being like,
Search is suspend two, right?
It's suspend, one green suspend
so two. You could suspend it turn one and still wait to see what you do on turn two, and then...
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact that it's only two mana, like, some decks are just willing to pay two mana for this effect anyway.
Well, that's the Deathrite Shaman effect, right? Where it's like, it has, and it you know, it's a sliding scale, but it's insane early game, but totally fine late game. If I top deck this turn eight, I'm just like, oh, I'll just cast this for
right,
two mana.
Yeah, and it's the flexibility.
Like, yeah, and I get one of five cards. Like, and you know, that's always the game plan. You know, in Legacy, one conversation has always been, the best players are the ones that don't cast Brainstorm on turn one. Like, the longer you wait to cast that Brainstorm, the better you are, or the better the card is, because the more information you have, the more likely it's going to find the card you need, versus just like, oh, I have an extra blue mana, I can cast this spell, why not? And this card has a similar effect, except the fact that it's just free the first
yeah,
three
I
turns.
Mean, like, free card selection just makes your opening hand so much better. And a lot of the time, Modern, you need your opening hand to be very good, which is one of the reasons that people are talking about, like, maybe the London Mulligan is too good. Well, this is like a card that frickin' draws you five extra cards, basically, and you put four on the bottom. Like,
I do think actually a skill test in Modern will be not casting this card. Like, you have it in your opening hand, you haven't cast a spell, but you kind of have everything you generally need. I don't think you fire this off. I think you wait.
Yeah, maybe I could see that. Like, if you're a Vizier combo deck and you have three lands, Druid, Vizier, Birds of Paradise or something, and you're just like, yeah, fine, whatever.
Yeah, they're like, they're going to have to make me stop it, and then I'd rather wait to
you
see
find the
what
piece
they kill
that
and,
they kill, yeah.
Yeah, and like, hold on to it. Like, I think I that just is a thing that happens, and there'll be people... It'll, especially for the first 6 months or 3 months, there'll be a lot of people that just like fire it off every time. And then, like, in hindsight, they're like, oh, wait, if I had just saved it, then it would have been fine. Or, you know. So I think the last card to talk about today, because it's a card that is not nearly as relevant and is just kind of dope, and then we can kind of save the rest of the set for next week, which will be Michael and Someone. It might be a Michael Marshall episode.
Okay.
Or it might be a Michael Ben episode. Or it might be a Ben Marshall episode. There's like so many different options. It's absolutely not a me episode. Unless you're coming to Dallas.
Are we
I
talking...
guess we could all go to Dallas.
Yeah. Are we talking about Charmin Prince? Who are we talking
Feasting
about? Feasting
Troll King.
The Troll King.
Yeah, the Troll King. I think this is the card I'm most excited about. I don't know if the world has noticed, but I like free green creatures that have lots of hoop. Actually, I like free creatures that take hoops to get something into play. I loved Arclight Phoenix. I loved Vengevine. I'm here for Feasting Troll King. I don't think this is nearly
as good
as... What
about Hogak? What were your thoughts on Hogak?
Too free.
Not enough hoops.
I don't want to cast things from my graveyard with resources. Sure. I want it to just happen for me. I'm a big fan of Prized Amalgam.
Sure.
You like when a card is like has a quest built into it.
Yeah,
like Vengevine is like if you can accomplish this, you get Vengevine. If you can accomplish this, you get Arclight Phoenix.
Right.
If you can feed the king, you get him back.
Hogak was just like, you can cast this from your graveyard.
Hogak was like, would you like a free 8/8?
Yeah.
That can never be removed?
With trample?
Yeah, the graveyard feature was kind of really just a, this is consistently going to come into play. It wasn't a, you have to get it into your graveyard and work for it, because it could come into play for free from your hand.
All right, so let me hear how you're going to put this Feasting Troll King into play in Modern. Let's
the same way what's I'm the doing deck? It. The same way I'm doing it in Standard. Well, all Standard cards are legal in Modern.
That is valid.
So with the Giants, you're talking about with Giant Opportunity?
There's the it's the 3-1. You get a 7/7, right? There's Witch's Oven. You can do Witch's Oven Cat Shenanigans. You got Gilded Goose, which we'll definitely talk about later on.
Witch's Oven Cat Shenanigans.
So the Witch's Oven is sacrifice a creature, get a food token, and the cat is whenever you sacrifice a food token, bring it in.
You have to activate an ability, sacrifice a food token, return this to the battlefield. And whenever it enters the battlefield, you drain them for one.
So
every turn you can drain your opponent for one.
Yeah. Other things with Witch's Oven.
Modern power level.
You can sack Feasting Troll King to get two food tokens, which is half of the way there to get it
and
back.
And then Oko makes a food and you get your Troll King back.
Right. And then you got, what else is there? So, and Oko is a card that is, I think,
okay, so right now you're describing a Standard deck.
Sure.
What?
Why is that good?
What does Modern add to this deck that makes it a Modern power level deck?
Parallel Lives? Maybe. Does that work on food tokens or is that creature
it
tokens?
It does work on food tokens. Cool. Yeah.
What is the
Second Harvest?
Is the Angel one creatures only? This is a total
tangent. Divine Visitation. It's creature tokens. Yeah.
Oh, okay. That makes me sad. What if we can make angel food? Angel food cake.
That's a funny enough pun that I'm definitely going to double check and make sure it doesn't.
We can only dream of that happening. So I don't know. I actually have no idea. I'm just really excited about this card. Yeah,
Divine Visitation is creature token.
Yeah. One single tier. Also doesn't work with Geist of Saint Trap.
So one thing that is interesting about it is it is a six. If you are looking to cast a six mana green creature with, say, like a Castle Garenbrig or something, or if you're just a general ramp deck, it is a 7/6 Vigilance Trample that has some resilience to removal. Is that better than anything else you could be doing in Modern? I mean, it's not as good as Primeval Titan. Is there a deck that wants this?
Well, I think you want this on the
outside
back
end, of like some type of food shenanigan deck that I'm not sure is really there.
I think the benefit here is the food token producing shell attached to things that care about having a bunch of artifacts that don't do anything in play, which is not mechanics that don't exist. I just in my head am not thinking about what that could be.
Okay, so let's Magical not Christmas talk like about art. Feasting Troll yet. Why don't you?
We talked about Oko like 2 weeks
come up
ago.
With a spicy list.
That's what I'm saying.
And then we'll talk
let's
about.
Well, let's talk to Decked and have them update it so I can play. Start brewing.
Maybe this is like a you send me the list next week, or maybe you talk about it in 2 weeks. I mean, I can't imagine anybody's going to scoop you on the modern Feasting food. Troll King deck.
I hope they do.
If somebody else comes up with a list that we see around the internet, maybe we'll talk about it. Otherwise, you come up with one in the next 2 weeks, and then we'll talk about it.
The best I can.
Because right now, I feel like we're just describing a Standard deck, and you're like, I'm just going to play my Standard deck in Modern, which is fine. But
I think I'm just going to play it in Standard on Arena. Advertisements for Arena streams coming soon. Already happening. I did it already. It happened. It's on the YouTube channel. You can go watch it.
All right.
And you'll be able to watch the future
ones. I'll save all the other cards then for future week when I maybe be a guest or whatever. But I do like Feasting Troll King.
Yeah, he's sweet. It's also a 7/6 Vigilance Trample that draws you 3 artifact life gain cards when it enters play from your hand.
Yeah.
I did like the thing you pointed out that if you manage to cast a Feasting Troll King from your hand and you have a dead Feasting Troll King, you can have 2 Feasting Troll Kings.
Yeah, you can buy one, get one free.
Yeah, it's a BOGO on Feasting Trolls.
Yeah, BOGO on Feasting Trolls.
They're the Burger Kings.
Get them all dialed in.
2 for the price of 1.
That's it for the episode this week. We got distracted. We have more cards we're going to need to talk about. I'm hoping this doesn't end up as another 4-week review. Luckily, this is the fall.
It will be.
This is the fall. So we live in a world where there's not a ton of more product coming out anytime soon. So it's not nearly as grindy.
We also have been slow rolling the previews a little bit. I think we probably only have one more episode, probably.
Have 2. I think I'll be back for 1. I think we'll do 1 final one. You guys do 1 next week and then 1 more after that.
I think the less verbose hosts are on, I think we have 1 left.
Wow. Michael talks just as much as I do.
Well, that's why he referred to us both as verbose hosts.
So Ben by himself? Ben talks too.
I bet me and Ben reviewing a set would be like, this set, Ben would be like, yeah, this card's great. And I'd be like, this card would be good.
You have to talk about the good cards, though, and he'll talk about the bad cards. That's the problem with Ben.
That's true.
yes, he's maybe not going to say as much
like,
about
good
cards.
Let me tell you about why I like Joust.
But right, he's gonna pull out some freaking wild ones that we would never mention otherwise, and he's gonna have a list. He's gonna be talking about it. He's gonna get going on some kind of.
He's like, you're not
Brig Paladin.
And there's
also,
you're not also hyped like, on Trail of Breadcrumbs. Come yeah. on.
There's also like layers, right? Like the podcast, the Masters of Modern podcast functions on this level. There is one person who talks about insane ideas and one person who tries to reel in the sanity. When Ben and me are on, I'm sanity person. Ben is insane person. When me and Michael are on, Michael is sane person and I'm insanity. When Ben and Michael and Ben, yeah, Ben's always the insanity.
he's all the way at the end of the insanity spectrum.
Right, right.
Set to 11.
So it's almost good for the podcast to let Michael at my, like, oh, you guys get ready for the dead horse list. We're going to beat it later. It's not going to happen right now. I posted on the internet. Michael doesn't understand.
It's called beating a dead horse because you're playing a dead horse deck and your opponent always beats you.
This is why the deck exists. It's ones like that. There is a weird horse synergy between the crystal one, the one that's 2 mana, gains you life whenever you cast a spell, and the 5 mana one that makes a 5/5 token that's indestructible every time you gain life.
Diamond mare and
crested sun mare.
Yeah,
and then I think you're also playing the dead pony too.
Yeah, the one that in your graveyard you can discard 2 cards for 3 and bring it into play.
The actual dead horse.
Ghoul Steed. And reanimator spells. And shenanigans will ensue. So we'll talk about that later. But thank you guys so much for listening to the cast as always. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Make sure to look at our Patreon. It's cool. There's the unraw, uncut episode. Marshall sweared at the beginning of this episode.
Oh my gosh.
Scandal. We talked about a bunch of cool stuff. You got a nice little fireside chat with just me because Marshall and Michael had to take a little break to go use the restroom at one point. You also should make sure to check out our YouTube channel. If you're on YouTube right now, please subscribe. Please hit the like button. If you're not on YouTube, you should look at it. We have card art. You can like see the cards we're talking about. Sometimes we're not the best at describing them, so it is a helpful tool. As well as if you're just on iTunes, please, once again, give us a like, give us a follow, and rate us. Give us like 5 stars. Not less than that. Just exactly 5. You can say not nice things if you want in the comment. I care less
Constructive criticism.
Right. Don't be mean. Every time someone's mean,
I really wish Michael was on the cast more often.
That'd be great.
5 stars.
Right. That's fine. Positive constructive.
That's exactly the kind of
like needs to lose weight or something. That would be mean. That would be sad. And 5 stars.
Alex is a jerk. He needs to lose weight. 5 stars.
Thank you guys so much, and we'll talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Thank you for your attention. See you later, alligator.
This has been a production of Time Traveler Media, sending podcasts into the future.